It is a real rare chance for activists who've been working on issues forever to get the attention of the world on them. And I mentioned some of the activist groups before. I had the good fortune of meeting many people who are activists across Rio. Interesting fact is that over the last year, there have been more protesters that have hit the streets across Brazil than have hit the streets in the rest of the world combined. Now, of course, that includes right-wing protesters protesting Dilma Rousseff, but it also includes a lot of left-of-center protesters. So you have seasoned activists with a list of grievances, and these international band of elites come into their town. It seems like a perfect recipe for banding together and asking big questions about what matters for your city.
We've been speaking with Jules Boykoff. The new book is Power Games, A Political History of the Olympics. Jules Boykoff, thank you very much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you.
And that's it for
now. You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6 p.m. Next is Bread and Roses.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to welcome the Golden Rule Peace Boat to Portland, Wednesday, June 8th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. In 1958, a crew of Quaker peace activists attempted to sail the Golden Rule to the Marshall Islands to interfere with U.S. nuclear bomb testing. This bold, nonviolent direct action inspired a worldwide movement leading to the Partial Nuclear Test Ban Treaty of 1963. On June 8th, there will be a panel presentation and discussion of their past work and plans for a peaceful, sustainable future, featuring Harvey Wasserman of Solartopia, Mimi German of The Radcast, Teresa Rayford from Don't Shoot Portland, and many more. Music will be provided by Dave Rovix. Again, that's the Golden Rule Peace Boat panel discussion on Wednesday, June 8th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Does your employer have a matching gifts program? Many companies offer a dollar-for-dollar matching charitable contribution for donations you make to KBOO. The impact of your gift may be doubled or possibly tripled. Participating companies also match gifts made by retirees and or spouses. Matching gifts are a great way for you to maximize your membership dollars. Check with your company's human resources or accounting departments to find out if your employer matches charitable contributions, and then a matching gift form. For more information on companies making matching gifts, go to kboo.fm/employer-matching. This program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Oregon Zoo Concerts, presenting Case Lang Veers, an evening of music with songwriters Nico Case, Katie Lang, and Laura Veers. Saturday, July 2nd, at the Oregon Zoo. Tickets and information for Case Lang Veers at the zoo on July 2nd are available at zooconcerts.com. Also, a grant from the Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, celebrating 32 years in business with their annual anniversary event, June 3rd through June 12th. Kickoff party Friday, June 3rd, 5 to 8 p.m. with live music and refreshments. Gazelle is located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at gazellenaturalfiberclothing.com.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs. I'm Mary Postaway, and I'll be your host for this evening. Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists. We give voice to those working for social justice and equity globally and locally. We strive to challenge systems of oppression. All of this, and we have fun doing it. You can like Bread and Roses on Facebook to get updates and see behind-the-scenes photos. Find us at KBOO Bread and Roses. We are also on the web at www.kboo.fm/breadandroses. Today, I would like to start by telling you a small story about how I was reunited with my daughter, Mirjam. She'll be with us on phone, and in studio will be my daughter, Marshalia, a friend of mine, Crystal, and another friend, Jackie. I'm sharing the story with you because tonight I host a show about reuniting with my lost family members. My daughter, Mirjam, is joining us on the phone, and we'll start off with her first. A long time ago, when I was 16 years old, I gave up my daughter up for adoption, but I always knew that I would see her again. So when she turned 18, I started looking for her. That's basically the story in a nutshell. However, I didn't find her right away. It took me a couple years. And finally, in 2010, mm-hmm. in November of 2010, me and my daughter, Marshalia, and my other family members reunited with my daughter, Mirjam, and it was a wonderful thing. Is she on the phone?
Hi.
Hi, honey. How are you?
Hi, okay, Mirjam.
Hi.
So I have a couple questions I'd like to ask you
right.
about your adoption. So did you know you were adopted your whole life? Or
yes.
You did. So, okay. So how was it? Did you feel the same way growing up as maybe your other brothers and sisters? Or did you feel different?
I kind of went back and forth. Mm-hmm. When I was younger, I really didn't quite understand what that meant. It was more just a word to me.
Uh-huh.
But then growing up, you know, I kind of had a little bitterness. And I was like, well, you know, why am I different from them, basically? But it was, honestly, it was short-lived. Because then I was able to go to my parents and, you know, be like, well, this is what I'm feeling. Why am I feeling like this? And, you know, they explained the whole situation from the start. And it made me feel better. And it actually made me feel more like one of their kids than more of an outsider.
Okay. Right on. That's good.
Yeah.
So, to everybody who's listening, I found my daughter on Facebook by happen chance through somebody else. We punched in her name and there she was. So when we did contact you first initially, what was your first thought in your mind?
A little freaked out because I didn't know who it was. I was like, what is this? Because the first message I got said, in time you will know you're so like your mother. And I was like, what is this? Who is this contacting me and what do they mean? And so I called my mom and asked her, and she's like, I have no idea who that person is. I don't know.
That was Amber, and, your Auntie Amber.
Yeah. No, the second one was Amber. The first one was Orlando on Shalana's account.
Oh, I did not know about that.
That's great. We're learning new things.
Learn something new every day, don't we?
Right? Amber wrote me a little while later, and I was at work. And after the first one, I was like, I'm just going to keep my phone on me, you know, just in case something else comes up. And then I get one from Amber, and it had everything, like where I was born, who I was born to, when I was born, and all of it. And I was in the stock room at my work, and I just hit the floor. And my coworker said that he has never seen my face so white, and he had to, like, basically assist me back to the office, and I had to go home.
Oh, well, what did you think? Was it as bad as you might have thought, or as good as you might have thought?
It was a lot of mixed emotions.
Yeah, for me, it was a little nervous, nerve-wracking.
Yeah,
I was surprised.
Nervous. I was scared. I was happy. I was sad. Like, literally every emotion that you can have through your body went through it all at the same time.
Yeah. For those who are listening, my sister and my husband and them got together and surprised me and my children, Marshalia and my son Elijah, with the reunion of my daughter by lying to me and telling me we were getting family pictures. So...
It was a white lie. It was okay.
It was okay, and it turned out beautifully.
A white lie. Okay.
So, Marshalia, what did you think when you met your sister for the first time?
Well, at the family photos, I was I was nervous because I was the one who seen her first, and I knew that it was her when I first seen her.
How did you know?
I just knew. She looked like my mom. There was lots of couples coming through, but when I seen her, I instantly knew. But it was nerve-wracking. I was scared. I was also really happy because I've always wanted an older sister or a sister in general, just to have, and it's been great ever since. I mean, you definitely just seem like you had those open arms, and you were very, very welcoming and loving. So, yeah, I think it made it a lot more comfortable for me.
Great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely nerve-wracking.
So I wanted to ask you, did you think that you would ever be able to reunite with me at any given time as you were growing up?
I wondered about it. I never knew if it was gonna, like, for sure happen.
Did you think it was gonna be me or you?
Huh?
Did you think it would be me?
I thought it would be me. I thought I would be the one.
Yeah. No, I was on it real quick.
It's all good.
Yeah.
You beat me to the punch.
She was actually really mad when it came to be your 18th birthday because the calendar was wrong, and she flipped out, and yeah. So she did try to find you on your 18th birthday, and she always told us about you. We knew about you from the beginning, so you were always a part of us, and you were always our family. It wasn't like some long-lost sister. It was like you were actually there every day.
That was my daughter, Marshalia. She's trying to explain that, you know, as my daughter Marshalia and my son Elijah, my two youngest, grew up, they knew about their brothers and sisters. So when we all met, they weren't strangers to my youngest two. However, we were strangers to them. Mm-hmm. So we kind of had to get used to that. But
I always wondered if I had siblings. That was my biggest thing.
Yes, and you do.
Because
a lot.
I was the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
When growing up, and I knew I was your first kid.
Yes, you are.
And so I was like, if she has siblings, I'm going to be the oldest, and I'm not going to be the youngest anymore.
Yeah, she's my oldest and has my first grandchild. And there it is there. So, all right, well, let me get on to the rest of my my guests here. Mirjam, it was great to have you on the phone, and I love
Thank
you so very, very much.
I love you, Sissy.
Love you, too.
Okay, and I will be calling you later.
Sounds good.
All righty. Bye-bye, baby.
Bye.
So, next, Jackie.
Yes.
How are you?
Good.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your story before I ask you some questions here?
Okay. So I was born in Compton, California in 1989. My mother was 16 years old, and my father was somewhere around that age. You don't know exactly. And he was in prison at the time. I was adopted by a white family, and we moved to Oregon when I was 2.
Jackie is Native American.
And I am Native American. Oh, yeah, that's kind of a big deal, huh? Sorry.
And Jackie is the host producer of Rose City Native Radio. So if you tune in Thursday evening to Kebu, yes. You know who she is.
Yes. Technically, because I'm Native American, technically my adoption violates the Indian Child Welfare Act. But we did not know that until I was 18 and I reunited with my birth father. And I've always known I was adopted from day one. I also have another adoptive sibling who I'm not blood related to, but, you know, he's adopted too. And I have half siblings who know about me as well.
Good. Okay. Well, like I asked Mirjam, did you think that ever in your life that you would be reuniting with your estranged family?
Yes. It was always a plan to meet with my birth mom. We just weren't really sure when, like, kind of whenever we got around to it or when I would be old enough. They used to send each other letters when I was younger, and then when I was in second grade, I was able to start talking with my mom on the phone on a regular basis. And then I met her for the first time kind of on a whim when I was 13. And now it's just, you know, she has the family to take care of and is trying to find work in California, which is very difficult at this time. So it's more of like a money thing, but we try to see each other whenever we can.
Oh, that's good. Are you still in contact?
Yes.
Good. That's good to hear. So tell me, when you grew up and you being Native American, mm-hmm. and your adoptive family being white, was it weird for you or strange for you growing up? Was it?
In a way, it's like your older daughter said as well, it was kind of half and half, like a mix, because we thought I was Mexican for the first 18 years of my life.
which is funny to me because she does not look like she has Hispanic heritage in her at all.
Technically, I do, but my tribe is like right on the border of Mexico and Arizona. I'm Pima and Yaqui, so Pima from the United States and Yaqui from Sonora, Mexico. So it was a little weird, especially when you don't look as much like your parents as everyone else does, so people don't realize that you're their kid or whatever. But it was always like, it was always there. All my friends knew. Everybody knew. It was this obvious, you know, it's like one of those things, like those facts. Jackie is adopted. Jackie is also brown. You know, right. It was just one of those things. But at the same time, you know, it was always a little weird. Not knowing, like, family medical history was a big issue. And, you know, while my mom could tell me as much as she could, like, it's still, I don't know it offhand. And, you know, people always thought I was Native American because of my hair, and you know, why don't you look like your parents, and this and that. So it was difficult because I also grew up in white suburbia, so I was always the non-white kid in the group a lot. So yeah.
Okay. So Jackie, tell me a little bit more about when you were you raised as like the white per se, quote unquote, white culture?
Yes, I was raised as a white girl.
White girl.
You know, kind of. I mean, like, it was, they didn't deny the obvious that I was not. However, I had a very white life. I had very white friends, very white boyfriends. I still have a very white boyfriend right now.
Who is so nice.
Yes, I have a giant white tree as a boyfriend, and he's wonderful. But that was just, yeah.
Marshall, yeah. You're saying me too.
She feels me on that, yeah. Birch trees. But yeah, so because that was all I was surrounded by all the time. I had a few non-white friends. I have a non-white friend who is Jamaican and is adopted by a white woman as well. So it was nice to have somebody who had a similar experience, but not exactly the same.
Right.
Because she wasn't in contact with her family. And then when I hang out with my birth family, my birth mom and my uncle and my brothers, it's a whole different culture that I have no idea about, and inside jokes and things that thankfully, like, they're patient and they explain it to me, but it's just like, it's like being on another planet with those guys. But at the same time, it's nice to have that being around people who are very obviously related to you. Mm-hmm. You know, like the little quirks and things that I think sometimes people take for granted. Like with my boyfriend's family, they are painfully related. Like, it's so obvious these people are related in their face, in the way they talk, in the way they act, in the way they carry themselves. It's ridiculously obvious. But like, I never had that growing up. So it's, I find it absolutely fascinating with family sometimes. And it's always nice when I actually get to hang out with my family to be like, oh my God, I'm really related to these people.
That's where I get it from.
Yes, exactly. I get it from you.
I get it. Okay, so now that you know that, well, obviously you knew that you were non-white growing up.
Yeah.
But now that you kind of know more about your culture, have you dove into finding more out about your Native American history?
I have been really trying to find out. Very, very, very hard in these last few years. When I was 18, it was kind of more of a novelty thing. I didn't really understand the full weight of what that meant. And I was still kind of living my white life and more focused on, you know, doing that after high school. But in this last few years, last 3 years or so, I started trying to look into it. There's very limited resources online, and that's all I have right now. I don't have money to go down to Arizona. And it seems like if I want to learn anything, I have to go to Arizona. And so that's something that I need to figure out. But I have been trying my best. And at the same time, I've also become a part of the Native American community here in Portland. And I've learned a lot about, you know, my cousin tribes and everyone else. And that's been absolutely fascinating. So I'm still learning about myself and my tribes. However, the work I do now, I help other disconnected youth learn about their tribes. So I try to learn about everybody as much as possible so I can be a resource in the future for those who were like me at one point.
Well, that's wonderful. That's really good. I'm glad to hear that. So, okay. Well, maybe we can get you some resources on how you can go and
have
a little bit more
knowledge
about your history. Okay. Well, it was really nice talking to you.
Thank you for having me.
My next guest will be Crystal.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm all right.
So I understand that you have brothers and sisters that you were estranged from?
A lot of them.
A lot of them. Can you tell me how many?
That I know of, I heard of 21, okay. But I know for sure 11.
And that'll be a whole nother show.
But I've had the chance to speak to 11 of them, but I'm for sure on 16 of them.
Okay.
Thanks to Facebook.
Okay. Right on. So what did you think when you met them? Was it good?
Well, I met my youngest sibling, my sister, who I saw her the day she came out the hospital, but after that, I hadn't seen her until last year. And she found me 3 years ago on Facebook. I'm a tattoo artist, so she had contacted me on Facebook about getting her first tattoo. But her name, it stuck out to me because, you know, my dad had several women baby's mothers. So I was in contact with one of them, of the sister that I'm talking about, and she had told me their adopted names because she lost all of them. She had six of my dad's kids. So she lost all of them, and I always knew her name, but it wasn't too much I could do about trying to look for them, being that they had name changes and everything and really didn't know about me. But she hit me up on Facebook, and it took about 2 years for me to meet her because I was in Memphis and she was in Kansas City. And the day I got to meet her was kind of like a setup, too. It was kind of weird. My stepmom had called me. She was excited. Her and my other sister wanted me to ride with them somewhere. And when we pulled up, they just had these big grins on their face from ear to ear. And when I look out the car, I see this little girl, but something about her seemed, you know, like I knew her.
Familiar.
Yeah, like I've met you before. And she walked up to me and was like, "Are you my sister?" And I looked in the car like, "Where's Ashton Kutcher?" You know, but I was nervous about it because, you know, I had spent, 23 years without having a sister, and I grew up all boys, so maybe I felt my life would probably be a little different if I would have my sisters around me.
Did you know that you had brothers and sisters growing up, or did you find out when you got older?
I found out piece by piece. I really found out my dad, he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer back in 2006. And he passed away Christmas night of 2008. And before he had passed away, he had came out with a lot of secrets and stuff we didn't know about. So, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry it took a tragedy to find out that.
Yeah, but after
blessed news.
After he passed, that made me want to look more because he's not here anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ever since then, since 2008, I've been on it trying to find my siblings. Like, I know we all don't look alike. And I don't really know all of their names. I know their names, but I don't know the names that they have now because a lot of them are split up into, you know, adoption agencies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm just trying my best. I would like some of the resources you have.
I do have some. And I'll be sharing them in just a little while.
I would hate to date one of my siblings. I'm just saying.
That wouldn't be good.
It wouldn't.
So are you in contact with any of them? Lately?
Yeah. I actually just met another one of my little brothers. I heard about him for about 4 years now. And he hit me up on Facebook.
Imagine that.
Yeah. Yep.
Facebook, right away.
Facebook saves lives.
Is that going to be your resource, Mary?
Back in my day, I didn't have to meet siblings on Facebook.
Back in my day, we didn't have Facebook.
There you go.
Okay, I'm old enough to have seen the first computer made. Just to let everybody know.
You talking about the one with the actual size apple on it?
Right. The big old apple with the bite out of it. Right on. Okay, so you said you're in contact with, well, I know that you have your brother and sister here in Portland, but you're in contact with your estranged brothers and sisters?
Yeah, a few of them. Our main contact is Facebook because, you know, we're spread out in different states.
Right.
But a few of them, I have their phone numbers, but it's better that I keep in contact with them on Facebook because phone numbers change all the time.
This is true. Yeah, I know how that goes. So have you, actually met any or just talked to them?
Yeah, I met a handful of sisters the same day that I met my little sister. I met three other ones.
Oh wow. Boy.
And, yeah.
Kind of wow right there, huh?
And I didn't know what to do. Like, I was in a room with them and a room full of females. You know how those conversations go. And yeah. I was kind of left out, like, whoa.
We have those kind of conversations at our house all the time.
Yeah. So it was just awkward. Like, I'm almost the youngest kid. So, like, I'm like the second to youngest, and I thought I was the only girl for years, to find out that I'm the oldest daughter of like 16 kids makes me feel like that much better. I have nieces and nephews I can play with. I don't have to worry about having kids myself. That makes it that much better, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, right on. So, Marshalia.
Yes, Mama.
Tell me, how, when you were just as surprised when we met Mirjam as I was.
Oh, yeah.
So, what did you think? How was it for you? Growing up, knowing you had sisters and brothers, but didn't, you weren't able to talk to them or meet them. How was that for you?
I always knew that someday it was going to happen because I know how determined you are. You know, when you want something or, you know, you're striving for something, you go for it. And so I always knew that I was going to end up meeting them. I always had that feeling. And I never really had the feeling like they weren't a part of us because
right.
you did such a great job at letting us know the full story. You told us up front. You didn't hide it from us. So we've always known our whole lives. It was really scary, but I think it was more exciting for me just because I could go to someone else. I'm not saying I wouldn't go to my mom, but just it's a different feeling.
Big sister.
Yeah, you know, having that big sister. And I've been in the Big Brother Big Sister program for many, many years, but it's not the same having that that real love, that real connection.
Family.
Like Jackie said, finding out those little quirks. Yeah, and seeing the similarities and also the differences between us. But I think it's been a great experience. I love all my siblings to death.
Yeah. For those of you who may not know me out there, even for those who do and don't know it, I have 6 children. My daughter was speaking of they. We recently, since 2010, have been reunited with my older son and another one of my daughters to fully make up my whole family. We are all now reunited and all of us know each other, so that's good. But that's what we're talking about when we say they. We're talking about my other son and my other daughter that were adopted out also. So yeah. Let me clarify that when we say they. So you know yeah. what we're talking about. Great. So what's your relationship with your brothers and sisters now? Well, we know what your relationship is with your brothers because they live right with us, right?
Yeah. So. Well, obviously families have their roller coaster rides and their bumps in the road. But I have to say overall, I've learned a lot from the time I met Mirjam till now.
Mm-hmm.
And especially I would have to say within like the last year and a half meeting my oldest brother, Matt, I've learned a lot about my younger brother who I've grown up with my whole life. And also a lot about myself and just my family in general. But I mean, I don't know. It's
for my children, I think it was a little different for them because they kind of knew. I mean, they knew everything about all my other children. So, you know, for them meeting, it was kind of like they already knew him. It was a little of a surprise to see him, but it's kind of like they already knew everything about him. So, you know, they kind of had that advantage over my other children.
Yeah.
And just for a little history, my oldest daughter that we spoke with today, she's 25. And I have a son under her who passed away and a son under that who is now 21. That's the brother that she was talking about, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Matt, we have a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She is 19. And then there's Marshalia and she is 17. And then I have a 13-year-old son. And that's the extent of my family. Thank God. No more
Jackson.
Kids for me.
Jackson.
Jackson, my grandson. He will be 2.
Yes.
Let me get that right. So, Jackie, what would you tell somebody who was in the same situation you were? Somebody who doesn't quite identify, maybe, with their adoptive family?
Mm-hmm. I would say, while you may not identify, and while you may be the only non-white kid or the only, you know, whatever, take that time to learn about yourself as much as you can. And with that knowledge is a very powerful tool, because not everybody can be educated about what we as adoptees go through, what people of color go through, and you are getting a glimpse into a completely different world. So use that knowledge. I use my experiences in a predominantly white school to talk about how predominantly white schools teach about Native Americans. And now that I know better, I can speak about that, having had that firsthand experience. So use the experiences you have now, learn about yourself, and then if you feel strongly enough, do what you can to help your people and help educate others, and maybe reach out to others who may, again, be in the same position. Always be curious about yourself, and although it feels like the foundation can shift and move underneath you constantly, just know that as long as you are comfortable with who you are and know who you are, that's fine. Things will change, but that's how life is.
That's right on. Marshalia, same question to you. What would you say to somebody who maybe knows that they have brothers or sisters, or maybe, you know, they have an estranged family member that they know about, yet they just, you know, aren't old enough maybe to reunite with them? Or what would you say to somebody in your situation?
I think the first thing I would say is be open-minded. Don't go into it closed-minded and having like a negative outlook on everything. Make sure that, you know, it's something that you want for yourself, if you're wanting to meet them, and make sure it's, you know, a right time in your life. And I think I'd say, you know, if you really want it, go for it. You know, don't just sit there and say you want something and not do it. Really strive for it if that's what you want. But, you know, for me, I don't meet very many teenagers or like middle school kids who have come in contact with their sibling. It's always adults or young adults who, you know, come in contact with them. So I've never really had to tell somebody like my advice or, you know, my opinion on it. But I think the biggest thing is just being open-minded and remembering that they're your blood, and that they came from someone who's also a part of you. And so if you love that person you came from, then you can also like share that love with the other person who came from them, if that makes sense.
I get it. Mm-hmm. You have anything to add to that, Crystal?
Well, I don't know. I guess if anybody has a deceased parent and has relatives that they would like to look for, they should, because your parent's not there anymore to tell you where they are, how they are, anything, you know. Mm-hmm. Like she said, you know, you should be open-minded and more accepting. Instead of, you know, going into a situation, you go into a situation negative, you have a negative outcome.
Mm-hmm. This is true. Mm-hmm. And I'd have to say my advice for people would be, again, have an open mind and ask questions.
Yeah.
If you want to know if you're adopted, or if you want to know if you have brothers or sisters, ask. You'll find the information out. First of all, I'd like to thank my daughters, Mirjam, if she's listening, and Marshalia for being on the show. I'd like to thank Crystal and Jackie for sharing your stories. And I'd like to go ahead and give you guys some information for those of you who would like to find any of your estranged family members. I'll give you a few resources here. The first one will be Oregon.gov. You will click on the first
tab.
Mm-hmm. That's on there, yeah. The other one is adopted.com. That's adopted.com. Another one is findmyfamily.org. Public library. You can find any type of information about adoptions through basically any public library. Familytree.com. Is it .com or .org, Marshalia?
.com.
Family Tree. Is another one, familytree.com, and reunion amber-registries.adoption.com. If you're out of Oregon and you go to any state adoption registry, you can start there. There here in Oregon, there's three different registries that you can join up to. They do cost a little bit of money. The higher up you go, of course, it costs a little bit more, but it's worth it if you want to find your family members. You can go to any of the DHS offices around and start there also. If you have a DHS case that started your adoption, that would be the best place to go. And finally, Facebook, people, Facebook. I'm telling you, it works. I found my daughter on Facebook. In fact, I found two. I found one through DHS through another state, and it's all happy and joyful now. So use the resources that I gave you. Go to Facebook. Punch a name in. You'd be surprised at what you could find. And so those are my resources for you guys.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And thank you, everyone, for listening and donating to KABU. Bread and Roses brings you feminist news and public affairs every Friday at 6 p.m. Like us on Facebook and check us out on the web at www.kabu.fm/breadandroses.
Hello, it's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like to me to go over everything. They say the time's supposed to heal ya, but I ain't done much healing. Hello, can you hear me? I'm in California dreaming about who we used to be when we were younger and free. I've forgotten how it felt before the world fell at our feet. There's such a difference between us and a million miles. Hello, how are you? It's so typical of me to talk about myself. I'm sorry. I hope that you're well. Did you ever make it out of that town where nothing ever happened? It's no secret that the both of us running out of time. So hello from the other side. I must have called a thousand times to tell you I'm sorry for everything that I've done. But when I call, you never
Hello, you are listening to KBOO Bread and Roses. We just finished listening to a rerun of a show Mary Postlewhite hosted last year about reuniting with lost family members. We are now going to turn to a recording of Mary Postlewhite talking about her experience as a survivor of sex trafficking to young women in her community. Mary discussed the situation in Portland and engaged youth in a project called the Red Sand Project, which consists of filling in cracks in the ground with red sand to bring awareness to those who have fallen through the cracks of sex trafficking and modern-day slavery. If you want to learn more about the project, the Red Sand Project, go to redsandproject.com. Here is Mary Postlewhite.
Okay, so I wrote some numbers down here on the board. Today I want to do a project about sex trafficking and modern day slavery. We're going to do a project called the Red Sand Project. But before we do that, I want to explain these numbers to you guys. In 2014, the mother of one of our family members' babies died. And she was murdered in a motel. Prostitution. And I took that to heart because for many years of my life, I was a prostitute for 11 years plus. And, you know, I've seen a lot of things happen. So when I found this project, I kind of felt like, okay, well, you know, let me go ahead and put Ashley in there too. Ashley Benson, may she rest in peace. Okay, so. The one thing I want to tell you guys about these numbers, they don't really seem that big, 3%, 1%, 5%, but let me tell you that all of these numbers up here are in the Portland metropolitan area alone. Okay? That's the only area that we're talking about right now. Portland is known for prostitution, picking up girls here and whatever. I-5 and I-205 are two of the major corridors that go throughout the United States. And they're highways that are highly used in sex trafficking. The average age for a victim would be 15 or 16, but the youngest girl here in Oregon, in Portland, was 8. So that just tells you that they don't really care how old you are. Doesn't matter. 469 is the number of victims that have fallen victim to sex trafficking in the Portland metropolitan area. And the study was done between 2009 and 2013.
Those were just teen girls. Those weren't even adults.
Right. And those are just the reported ones. Those are the ones that actually were either found or got caught or however it worked out. The officers, the sheriff's office, has picked up 421 pimps, or I'll just say pimps because that's really the only word you can really say it if you're exploiting somebody for money and sex. The average life of a girl who is a prostitute and starts prostituting or working in any kind of sex trade is 7 years. Within that 7 years, she'll be beaten, she'll be used, she'll be strung out, she'll be given out to whoever has the most money. And in 7 years, if she's not strung out on drugs, if she's not in jail for the rest of her life, or he, she may be dead. Or, even worse, missing and never found. That happens every single day. Every day. Seattle has 4 strip clubs. Dallas has 3. Portland, Oregon has over 50. 40 of them are erotic dance clubs. 47 are all nude clubs. 35 are adult bliss clubs. That's a peep show. You go in, you put your quarter in, and you get to see the girl dance behind the glass. And 21 of them are lingerie shops, where the girls model and do whatever comes along with that. So that's in Portland metropolitan area alone. Dallas is a huge city. Portland is nowhere near as big as Dallas. But the statistics are staggering, like staggering, that it's just right here. 96% of all sex trafficked victims are female. Usually a younger woman or girl. 3% are male and 1% are transgender. 82nd Avenue and Sandy Boulevard are the two, and Burnside are the two, three hot spots here in Portland. You know, you can't walk up 82nd Avenue without somebody saying something to you about something that you don't want to hear, trust me. 27% of the victims are African American. 5% are Hispanic. 40% are white. 16% of the victims have babies by their tricks or their pimps. I was one. Now I have them in my life forever. 2 and 3 victims are now assisted. What was it by the sex?
The Sexual Association Resource Center. And they struggle with substance abuse, or so any sort of like drugs or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, 11% of all these people right here are exploited by their very own family. My pimp, my daughter's father, he exploited his very own cousin. They don't care, so she was willing. Why not? You see what I'm saying? He don't care. They don't care. I'm glad that you guys came, because I want to talk to females in particular, because females are way more vulnerable than anybody else. People think it's cool. When I started becoming a prostitute, I was 14 years old, and a man offered me $250, and I was loving life. $250? You know what I could have got then? Shit, I'm 42 now. You know, back then, what I could get with $250, a lot, and I was impressed, and it just was a real. Then all of a sudden, I started getting nice clothes, and I was driving nice cars, and before you knew it, I was getting my teeth knocked out. I had to have reconstructive surgery in my jaw. When I came back to Portland, Oregon in 2000, I had to have my teeth fixed because they were shattered. Recently, my teeth started falling apart again. So that means that I have to go back to the dentist and I have to have my mouth reconstructed once again. I'm 42 years old. One pimp did that to me. One. He beat me where I didn't recognize myself. Now I have a baby by him. Shit happens, huh? Well, you know, I hope that you guys hear what I'm telling you, because we feel like it won't happen to us. Oh, whatever, I know what whatever. But guess what, that quick. My abuser came from California when I ran away and came all the way up here to Portland, Oregon, and went and knocked on the battered women's shelter door that I was at and physically pulled me out of the battered women's shelter and drove me back down to California. That's what they do. That's what they do. I have scars on my face. I have a permanent indentment in my head where my skull has been fractured because I got a steel pole wrapped around it. I have a scar on my forehead and a lump permanently because I got hit with a steel bat and it split my forehead open. I have a permanent crooked smile and messed up teeth because I got beat so bad that you couldn't recognize nothing. My face was mangled and mutilated. My lips were cut. And this is real. It's all real. And it happens every single day. And here in Portland it's the second in the country highest in victims of sex trafficking and modern day slavery. Now, when you think of sex trafficking, the first thing that you think of is prostitution. At least I do. There's a difference. Prostitution is exploiting somebody for your own personal gain, for, you know, whatever reason that you want, greed. Sex trafficking is forcing somebody by coercion into traveling for sexual gratification or for the person who's sending them. That's kind of the same, but not quite. Slavery takes form in a lot of different ways, whether it be prostitution or in sweatshops. It's still a form of modern day slavery. And they get treated just as bad. The people that work in these shops and make clothes and, you know, all the good stuff that we get every day, they get treated just as bad as the prostitutes, if not worse. Some of them have families and they only make a couple dollars a day. They're being forced to work and make clothes that we take for granted. We, not even realizing that we're doing it, not even realizing the struggle that went through, the people went through to build the jacket that you're wearing and the shirt that I'm wearing. And it's real. It makes you look at things differently. So I have a project I found on the internet, the Red Sand Project, like I said. And what it is is to advocate for people who have fallen through the cracks of modern day slavery and sex trafficking. And the neat thing about this is if we do a big enough thing, which I kind of want to do, but individual is fine too, you can see it from outer space because of the color of the sand. And that's actually the one point that caught me on this project because, you know, I do the radio show with Delphine and I've talked about sex trafficking on there, but just to know that there's something that the people in space can see and, you know, it kind of, it's powerful for me. You know, I've been in that situation. I am a victim, so I, you know, it's powerful for me to know that our astronauts can see the red sand if we make it big enough for them. So, but anyway, it's really easy. All you do is you take the sand and we'll go out into the neighborhood and you find a crack anywhere in the ground and you fill the crack with the red sand and I'll take a picture of it and I'm gonna post it on social media and I'll put on there some kind of quote or something. And what all it's doing is just bringing awareness. You know, it doesn't take much time, doesn't hurt anybody, it's free. So, you know, I thought that this would be a good project and it was just great that it was just a whole bunch of girls here now because, you know, we fall victim. You know, I'm sure that some of you know somebody who has either fallen victim or is about to fall victim or, you know, has the lifestyle that's going on is leading them in that direction. Most of us know at least one or two people. And if you know somebody like that, and you know, they may think it's cool because they're getting all the tight-ish, but it's not cool. It's not cool at all. Because what they have to go through to get that, they don't have to go through. They don't have to go through that. Really? Talk to them. Tell them the statistics. Tell them that 96% of the women who get victimized here in Portland alone, tell them that. Tell them that it's not worth their life. 7 years? Do you want to live for another 7 years? And that's it? Right, how about you? You want to live for another 7 years and that's it? Right. I want to live more than 7 years. But that's not going to happen if I decide I want to go and do the things that I was doing before. That's not going to happen for you if you go out there and find yourself falling victim to this. You have to be smart and you have to know. Everybody here knows. I'm quite sure that everybody here knows when a man is trying to get at him. You know what I'm saying? You know the signs and the awareness to look out for. So we're gonna go outside and we're gonna put some sand in the ground.
Everybody loves the things you do, from the way you talk to the way you move. Everybody here is watching you, 'cause you feel like home. You're like a dream come true. But if by chance you're here alone, can I have a moment before I go? 'Cause I've been by myself all night long, hoping you're someone like a movie. It was just like a song. I was so scared to face my fears. Nobody told me that you'd be here. And I swear you moved overseas. That's what you said. Just like a song. When we were young, when we were young, when we were young, when we were young. It's hard to admit that everything just takes me back to when you were there, to when you were there. Just like a movie, it was just like a song. My God, this reminds me.
You were just listening to Mary Postlewhite talk about the Red Sands Project and the issue of sex trafficking. If you want to learn more also about sex trafficking, you can learn more at sharedhope.org as well as the PolarisProject.com. It is currently 6:58 p.m. and you are listening to KBOO Community Radio Portland. Next is Hard Knock Radio.
Easy rider, see what you done. Easy rider, see what you done. Made me love you, now your sweet man's done come. Hey, honey, now your sweet man's done come. When you see me coming, heist your window high. See me coming, heist your window high. See me leaving, hang your head and cry. Oh, honey, just hang your head and cry. You said you loved me, loved my easy ride. You said you loved me, loved my easy ride. Said you loved me, oh Lordy, how you lied. Hey honey, you know you sure